The core question of my conversation with author, keynote speaker, and workplace belonging expert Smiley Pozwalski was, should we encourage and foster meaningful human connections in the workplace? But our conversation, in many ways, wasn't about work or the devastating financial implications of the epidemic disengagement of the workforce today. At core, our conversation was about, what type of world do we want to live in? Do we want a world of connection and engagement, or do we not? Your perspective and views on this question impact everything in our society, from work to play, from church to school, from whom we choose to value to whom we choose to forget. It is the animating question of our time and our ongoing question about what is good citizenship and what is good humanity. The answers will either bring us closer together or further stoke the flames of division and misunderstanding. On the very basic, fundamental level, it comes back to the house divided principle. We either stand together or we fall together. Hello and welcome to At the Podium with me, Patrick Huey. At the Podium is a multimedia platform that brings together people from a diverse background of lives, careers, and experiences who all share one thing in common. They have stepped fully into the transformative power of finding and raising their voices to make an impact on the world we live in today. At the Podium holds a space for everyone to share their stories, to be heard, and to bring us inspiration. Today, I'm thrilled to share the podium with Adam Smiley Pozwalski. Adam Smiley Pozwalski is an internationally renowned keynote speaker, workplace belonging expert, and best-selling author of three books, including The Quarter Life Breakthrough and Friendship in the Age of Loneliness. Smiley regularly speaks at Fortune 500 companies and has advised heads of state and foreign leaders about next-gen talent, workplace belonging, and the future of work. Smiley's TED Talk has been viewed nearly 2 million times, and he has spoken in front of 50,000 people in 25 countries. Smiley's writing has been published in the Harvard Business Review, Fast Company, and the Washington Post, and his work has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the New Yorker, and the World Economic Forum. Adam, welcome. Smiley, welcome to At the Podium.
Thank you so much for having me, Patrick. It's wonderful to be here.
It's such a pleasure to have you on. I have become familiar with your work over the past couple of years, and I think we're going to have a really wonderful conversation today about what the future of work and living looks like, particularly from a Gen Z and millennial standpoint. But I think there'll be lessons for all of us to learn from this discussion. So thank you for the time today.
Thank you.
So I was reading your work over this past weekend, and you put out some very, what I would call, startling statistics about work and happiness and loneliness. And so in your writing, you say that 61% of all adults in the U.S. experience loneliness, according to the National Cigna survey of 10,000 adults, which is a huge survey. And that 61% skews higher for millennials, who are at a 70% reporting of loneliness, and Gen Zers are at 80%. And then you go on to say that 70% of workers are disengaged at work, and that 20% of our workforce are actively sabotaging the businesses from within, which made my hair that I don't have stand up on my head when I saw that number, because we're literally paying people to undercut the efforts that we are trying to do as businesses across the country. And then in your latest book, you write, in response to these mounting pressures of modern life, we've been prescribed every potential cure under the sun. Quit social media, download a meditation app, go keto, get a Peloton, do CrossFit, do nothing. The list goes on. And yet we rarely talk about the simple power of spending more time with friends, We tap our phones 2,600 times per day and look at our phones every 12 minutes and spend 50 minutes a day on Facebook and Instagram. And yet we spend just 4% of our time with friends. And that made me think, as I was reading these statistics and reading some of your work, I wanted to know, because we'll get into it later, I wanted to know, who are you writing for? Who are you really talking to? Are you talking to that person who is that millennial Gen Z person at the beginning of building their brand, their narrative, their story? Are you talking to people like myself who are Gen Xers and we're looking back over where we've been the past 20, 30 years? Who are we talking to within your work?
Great question, Patrick. And thanks for that beautiful kind of citation and summary of some of the work I've been focused on. I think it actually is a nice through line. I think the answer is everyone, but there's always a saying, you know, you start with what you know, write what you know. And I started out with my own story of being a 20-something disengaged in the workplace. That's what I was. That was my experience. I'm an elder millennial. I consider myself an elder millennial. I will turn 40 years old this year. I was born in 1983. So I consider myself part of the Oregon Trail generation. Which is, yes, we grew up with technology, but it was more like Oregon Trail. We knew what email was. We had AOL Instant Messenger, but we didn't grow up with cell phones. Like when you made a date and you were going to meet someone at 7 p.m. and they didn't show up, like that was it. Like unless there was a payphone and they had a pager, like you just got stood up. You're going home. That's it. There's no, I'll be there in 10 minutes or I'm going to get in a Lyft. Like that's it. The date's over. So I think that I experienced this bridge between this next generation of young people that are completely, you know, they call Gen Z the smartphone generation. They literally do not know a world without iPhones. And then older millennials, Gen Xers, baby boomers, who are coming to their work and to their careers from a different perspective. So what I started with was kind of talking about this young generation over addicted to technology, facing FOMO, fear of missing out, constantly comparing themselves to others, experiencing even heightened degrees of loneliness, because the scientific definition of loneliness is the subjective gap between where your relationships are and where you want them to be. Mm. And if you're constantly seeing everyone else all of the time, sharing their highlight reels on TikTok and Instagram, like, oh, they're there. Oh, they're in Bali. They're in LA. They're on the beach. Look at them. Oh, they're already in love, you know, and you see that all the time. You're going to have more loneliness. But then what I started to realize is, okay, these young people are looking for more connection, more community at work. They're disengaged. They want more passion, more purpose in their workplace. Everyone wants those things. So actually the very things that I was struggling with to find more meaning, find more purpose, find more connection in my work as an elder millennial, not only were people younger also dealing with that, but people much older were too. And the bridge and the way to bring those generations together was the very thing that I was looking for, was that connection, a deeper connection, a sense of kind of personal connection, both with your individual work, like actually aligning with what it is that you do, but also finding much more of a sense of community in the workplace. I think it used to be the old school perspective was you go to work, you get paid, and all of that good stuff happens outside of the workplace, if you're lucky. Hopefully with friends, with family, with your community, with your neighborhood, maybe you're involved with your church, or you're in a bowling league, or you go to the VFW post, or all these things that are just so antiquated and not very relevant to the modern era, unfortunately, right? We need those institutions, but that maybe we can find some of that, or hopefully build some of that community, some of that belonging, some of that deep sense of connection at work. And that's what both young people and older people were looking for. And I said, okay, there's something going on here. My work is both for the young people, because that's who I am. And I like to be an advocate. I like to speak on behalf of young people, because I think they get a bad rap every now and then. But I'm actually talking about something that everyone wants, right? It's not like the statistics don't just show that young people are disengaged at work right now, or that young people are disconnected. Everyone is, right?
I agree with you. My question is work the place? And do these institutions like church and family and sports and friends, which you talk about in your latest book, do these institutions need to step it up? Is work the place for these things to happen? Just given what work is today, and there are certain things that have to happen at work, which means we have to deliver a product, or we have to meet this deadline, we have to meet these goals. it almost feels like there's an inherent tension in what you're talking about, because work in a way is built not to give you those things that you're describing.
Right. I think it can be. I think it's a yes and.
Okay.
Should people find that at work? Yes. Should that be the only place they find it? Absolutely not. That is not healthy, right? If you are only depending on your work to be your identity, to be the place where you find this sense of purpose, sense of connection, you're going to burn out. And you also might not get that much done, right? Because you're going to be constantly connecting, constantly basically treating the workplace as if you were hanging out with your friends at a cafe, at a bar, at a spa, whatever. Like, no, the workplace is somewhere where people need to get things done. But I think, you know, we spend a third of our lives, unfortunately, and sometimes often much more, at work. Yes. That's a lot of time. The time that we're not spending at home and we're not spending sleeping, we're spending at work. And now these lines have been blurred between work and life. So like, you know, I'm in my home right now. You know, it used to be, you could say, oh, deal with that at home. People are like, I am home.
Right.
What, like my Zoom calls here, the kids are in the back, you know, the dog's screaming. I got to fold laundry after I get off the Zoom call. So it's like work, life, only make connections outside of work. People are like, I'm at my house. I got kids over here. I got their friends over. I got my friends. She's working in the other room because her Wi-Fi wasn't working. So right. I think that it's the sense that it doesn't matter exactly the location that people find these things, is that they have an opportunity to find connection and belonging at work. And yes, I will be an advocate that these things matter. I mean, the data proves it. Employees who have a best friend at work are 7 times more engaged with their work. Mm-hmm. 7 times. If you do not have a close friend at work, there is only a 1 in 12 chance that you will be engaged with your job.
Mm.
So lonely employees cost US employers $4,000 per year per employee. That leads up to $406 billion costing the US economy. If you have high levels of connection among your employees, you can save up to $52 million a year for a large company. Mm-hmm. So yes, I think it matters. I think it matters for the bottom line, for productivity, for people being more connected, for people less likely to call in sick, less likely to quit their job, to have less turnover. Connection matters. It also matters because it's the right thing to do just for people to live healthy, happy lives. All of the data points that social connection leads to lower levels of anxiety, depression, stress, heart disease, early death. Loneliness is as dangerous to your health as smoking 15 cigarettes a day.
Mm.
It literally is killing people. And we don't talk about it enough, both outside of work and at work. I don't think they have to be. I think it's a yes and. We have to talk about it. We need to rebuild those institutions and have more focus on, as you were saying, kind of the sports, the neighborhoods, the community, religious institutions, those bedrocks of kind of community, where people find identity and community and support in their communities. Mm-hmm. And it's not like that can be the only place, because people are spending a lot of their time working either at an office remotely or hybrid. That's a place where they need the belonging connection too. And oftentimes that leads to more connection outside of work as well.
I think you're right. The thing that I look at is, I was reading in the Harvard Business Review article that you wrote back in June of 2022. And there were some really interesting things that companies were doing around building this sense of connection amongst their employees. And they were doing things like do not disturb hours. And they were doing things like late night art. And as I'm sitting here reading it, the part of me is saying yes, yes, yes to this. And the other part of me is going, well, what happens when 4 people call out, you know, do not disturb hours are off because it's all hands on deck. And then in California, I'm thinking, okay, late night hours, that means late night art. That means they're going to be here for longer days. That means they're going to have to take another lunch, 2 more 10-minute breaks. It feels like sometimes the suggestions that are coming through are for these companies that have abundant resources. And we know that, you know, 50%, maybe a little more of our businesses are small and mid-sized businesses, and that these initiatives are amazing, but how are they practicable in an environment where you have 20 employees? And to close early for late night art could impact your true bottom line. And I know the answer. I know what the answer would be. But I have to ask the question because this answer.
No, it's a great question. Right. And I share some of those examples almost as aspirational. It's not like you have to do these things. It's you have to get at what these things are providing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So do not disturb hours does not mean universally, no matter what, Thursdays from, you know, 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. You don't talk to me if like if there's a crisis, if there's something happening with weather, if we have to close. Of course, you're going to not have that. It's an expectation. The point being, sometime of the week, especially for managers and leaders, you have a period to focus, right? Because the data shows, I think there's a statistic that the average CEO, the average manager has about 20 minutes of free time a week, of focused free time a week. I mean, how are you supposed to do your job? Now, that doesn't mean you'd have do not disturb hours all of the time. It means that you're cutting out some time and that everyone needs that time in this kind of disconnected and, you know, attention world where everyone is competing with distractions for your time and attention, that people, we create an intention around do not disturb, right? Or you can set, hey, I need focus time, or I got to get this done. And that's an expectation that leaders set, that so that their teams understand that as well, because they need it too. It's basically what I'm doing that is to show the importance of focus and renewal, right? Employees who take a break every 90 minutes report a 30% higher level of focus. That is to say, employees who literally leave their office or leave their workstation, leave their computer, walk outside, stand in the sun, have a cup of coffee, meditate, sit on a bench, call their mom, whatever. When they come back to work after simply just a 5 to 10 minute break, they're going to be more focused, right? They're going to do better work. And the same thing with late night art. I'm not saying that people have to do that activity. And it also doesn't have to be at late night. It can be over lunch. It could be first thing in the morning. It's that you're doing, that is an activity where music is playing and people are connecting and asking each other deep questions and asking each other to be vulnerable. The point being, we need to bring more creativity, more play, more connection into the workspace. It doesn't have to be that activity, and it certainly does not have to be at 9 p.m. or 10 p.m. It doesn't have to be with drinks. It just has to be an intention that we're doing unusual and maybe things that are a little bit more outside the box to form connection than just simply having a Zoom call and everyone going around and sharing their name and what they did over the weekend. That we kind of have, I share that to kind of say, hey, let's go deeper. What does it look like to bring in some of these more experiential activities? You know, I also share an example in that piece of making onboarding a community building exercise,
yes,
right? And having onboarding cohorts. Now you can do that with a 1,000 person company, 100 person company. You could do that with a 20 person team, 15 person team. Every time someone new joins the team, yeah, it's going to take a while. You know, you have a little bit of some sort of experience to welcome that new person in person, then making that onboarding, not just, all right, good luck, have a good first day, but actually making that, here's the book, here's the employee handbook. It's 400 pages. You're not going to read it because I didn't read it. Nobody reads it. But instead making that time all about their experience, and maybe they get to shadow different people. Maybe they get to have lunch with different people throughout the week. And it's kind of an intentionally designed onboarding. That's what I'm getting at. You don't have to do it the way that a big company does it. You just have to say onboarding isn't just this. It's not just welcome, fill out this paperwork, talk to HR, you know, get set up on payroll. Here's your email. We'll see you on Monday. That's going to be a disaster in this new kind of hybrid disconnected world.
Is this a function of what we're seeing, what we're experiencing? I feel like this was all perhaps sped up by the two and a half years of COVID. And it feels like there is somewhat of a tension between what you're talking about, what we probably need to be doing, what we probably should be doing in terms of creating a much more diverse, expansive view of what the work environment can be. But do we just have the bandwidth in real time to do it? And is that part of the fatigue, part of the reason why people are not coming back in droves to work, or that people are leaving jobs after 3 weeks because it's not meeting whatever fire within them they need to have it meet? Is this part of that tension that we're experiencing? And are we in a shift? Are we in a paradigm shift that we're all going to have to make some sort of adjustment to, or the enterprise just won't work?
I think the pandemic sped up, it accelerated many of the tensions, the questions that were already brewing in the workplace for a lot of people, especially when it comes to working parents, when it comes to women, when it comes to Black workers, when it comes to people of color in the workplace, when it comes to caregivers, of the unsustainability that wasn't working prior. And young people, frankly, Gen Zers, who were saying, hey, this doesn't work, or I'm not being seen, or I'm not being heard. This idea of going into the office every day doesn't work necessarily for me, or I don't feel recognized for my accomplishments. But it took a pandemic for us to start listening and paying attention to the needs of people in the workplace that were not being seen or heard or recognized as much as they should. So I think it accelerated a lot of these things that people were looking for in terms of more flexibility at work, in terms of having more individual say over their career progression and having kind of a say in where they were headed and what they were working on, kind of worker autonomy. And also in terms of the balance between work and home, I think in terms of being more supported at work, I think in terms of mental health, again, a lot of people were saying, hey, this work is not necessarily sustainable, or I'm suffering from a lot of anxiety and stress. I'd like to see a therapist, or do we have mental health well-being days? Can I take a well-being day? I don't want to use my PTO, but I just need a day to be. I need a day to be an adult in a world that is really scary and sad and intense sometimes. Those things people were saying before 2020, we just weren't listening. Again, the statistic you presented around loneliness, 2/3 of Americans were lonely. That was in 2020, prior to COVID, prior to the pandemic. Prior to two and a half years for many people of social isolation, lockdowns, masks, people not going into the office as much, 2/3 of Americans were lonely. And it's only gotten worse, meaning people were feeling this. They just, and they may have been saying it, but they weren't, we weren't listening. So I think what the pandemic did is it normalized and destigmatized many of these conversations so that it's now okay for people to say, hey, I'm struggling with this. Can I get help? Or do we have support at work? Or, hey, I know that this is so important to me that I may leave this job, great resignation, quiet quitting, because I see myself more, I have more agency, or I've experienced like, hey, I can't do this. It's not worth my suffering for a boss, for a disrespectful or a toxic workplace. Like, people are just going to walk. And that was a little bit of an awakening, and that was accelerated by the pandemic. So I think many of these shifts are really positive. I actually think these things were already happening. You know, again, you know, DEI has accelerated so much in the past 2.5 years. People were working really hard on this stuff way before 2020, as they should be, right? Because most workplaces are not equitable. They're not inclusive. They're certainly not diverse in terms of across age, across race, across gender, across disability, all these things. So these are positive shifts. Now, what happens is, there is this tension between some employees, especially younger employees, wanting things to happen right away.
Right.
So the shifts happening, I think, are really positive. Now, the expectation that they're going to happen the second day you're on at a new job, or the second week or the second month, because you feel all these things, that may not be the case, because that's not how organizations work. That's not how change works. It takes time. Now, again, I'm in favor of all of these things happening. I think where we get into a little bit of the tension is the expectation that they're going to happen overnight. And that's where we get into, you know, situations where people are leaving their job after a few weeks, a few months, and costing organizations a lot of headaches and frankly, a lot of money, because it is incredibly difficult to hire people, train them, and have them quit their job, or even quiet quitting, where they're basically out, but they're not, they're still getting paid, which might be worse.
Which is worse.
Much worse. So I think we have to be realistic in our expectations, but also steadfast in our resolve to make these changes and have that roadmap, have that vision. Hey, this is where we're going. Hey, here are our metrics when it comes to diversity recruitment. Here's where we're trying to be when it comes to flexibility. We're not going to be able to make everyone happy all the time, but these are our values. Hey, here's where what we're thinking about when it comes to mental health, when it comes to connection, when it comes to supporting our employees. And yes, we are not going to take care of every single issue all of the time, and we're not going to be able to take care of it the second you write the email or file the complaint, but this is what we stand for. This is what we care about. Can we find that common ground? Can we find a place where your interests and goals align with where we want to be?
And what if the answer to our loneliness is not going to be solved, assuaged, reduced by work? What if the onus gets put back on us as human beings to deal with each other in better ways that are maybe outside the model of a work environment? Because you can't have George Floyd and then turn around and say, let's have a better work environment, because the people within the work environment are broken.
Right. The culture is broken, or the society is broken. Yeah, it's a great point. Again, I think it's a yes and. So I think, again, the people, the people that are at work, when they go leave the office, they're still those people. And they still have those same fears, those same desires to be safe, to feel like they have the same ability to succeed in this world. So that doesn't change when someone goes home, then they change their clothes, they come to work, they change, or actually they're in the same clothes because they are home. The point being, I think we need to talk about it at work and outside of work. So this kind of idea that it's all outside of work, it's beyond work. That doesn't mean we can't address some of the things at work. Also, the people that maybe do not understand these issues are working with you too.
Right.
And so maybe the best place to reach them, you know, and I'm not saying this is the onus of people of color or people with less power representation in society to do that work at work. But this is a great place for, let's say, allies or people in more positions of privilege or power to connect with those people and say, hey, this is why this does matter at work. Hey, this is why I care about it. Hey, this is what you should, you know, have you read this? Have you taken to listen to this podcast? It actually is a great opportunity to reach people because probably you have some level of trust. You're working together every day. You share kind of an experience. You probably laughed together before, or you can, you know, complain about, oh my gosh, that client was horrible, or remember this person. And then maybe you can reach them like, hey, by the way, like this is happening in the world. Like, what are your thoughts? Or like, hey, you know, let's talk about this. And that I think is a positive because then that person can go back to their family or their uncle that is, you know, maybe not being very positive, having a positive impact on their family or their society and saying, hey, let's talk. You know, I was talking to my coworker, you know, and he was telling me about this, or I kind of changed my mind on this. So I think it's a great place to reach people and have those conversations. Again, that's not the focus of work. We have another thing that we're doing at work, which is our jobs. And I think building these healthy, deeper relationships at work can only help us build a more healthy, resilient, inclusive society. That's maybe I'm optimistic. I mean, you know, I have had the nickname Smiley since high school, and I tend to see the best in people or see the biggest, most optimistic potential in people. But that is my belief, my philosophy. I don't believe that, you know, we're going to only solve these mega challenges by assuming that people are going to do that when they're, you know, going to the grocery store, right? Or outside of work. I just think that those institutions and the connection and communities, especially outside of major cities, is so fragmented these days. And people are spending so much time online. They're getting their news, their information, their media from Twitter, from TikTok, from Instagram, from not from human beings or not from, you know, their colleagues. And one of the places where we still at least aspirationally have that connection or could have it is at work. It's one of the last places where we actually sit down across from people or are in a room with people. So that's where my belief comes from, Patrick, is that you just look around and you look at the way people live and, you know, maybe they drive to get groceries, they go to the doctor, but a lot of them, especially people that are working remotely, like don't interact that much with other people besides their family. And that's it. And that to me, as we think about the future of work, the future of technology, right, becoming so much more a part of our lives, you know, VR and AI and all of these things, if we don't have that human connection at work, I get scared. And I believe that if we have that level of connection at work or aspire to it, again, not this perfect, we're all friends, everyone belongs, you know, everyone here is equal. Everyone belongs here. And like, meanwhile, it's like, well, not outside there because, you know, most people's lives are really shitty. You know, it's not like being unrealistic. It's just having that as an aspirational goal.
Well, and something you say that's very interesting is that the work environment, if you are face-to-face in the work environment, and we see that companies now are really pushing people to come back to work in person, it may be the only place in your life where you do interact with people who are not part of your political belief system or your religious belief system, where it's still the arena, as Theodore Roosevelt said, where we all come.
Yes.
Because now we're very separate in terms of, you know, your zip code determines where you went to school, what cable news show you watch, and work still can be that place where we meet in the middle still. So I think your point is I think the optimism and the need are quite salient right now for us.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that it's only at work. I you know, the polarization of this country, that needs to be something we do outside of work as well. And to have those conversations and to do that work outside of work and to change the societal structures that are causing many of these problems. And I just believe that because we spend so much time at work and because it's one of the only places left for human connection, human interaction, that we lose an opportunity there to reach people, to also find more connection and belonging for ourselves, to learn something about who we are, to understand, well, I thought about this something in a way and I was completely off. Wherever you are on the political spectrum, whatever your politics, your beliefs are, I think that there's a space for people to learn and be like, oh my gosh, I didn't understand why this person felt that way. Hmm. That can be transformative for someone. And I think that where it happened at their desk, on a Zoom call, at the water cooler, in a meeting, you know, at an event, at a conference, it matters that it happened.
Right. It's interesting what we're talking about, because I was watching your TEDx and I was watching TEDx 1, TEDx 2 at Wesleyan. And then I was reading your book and the HBR article. And I saw a very distinct growth transition for you, which is quite interesting to watch. Because in that first, and I wrote it down, it was so fascinating. In that first TEDx, you were talking about, it was really based on your book called The Quarter Life Breakthrough. And you gave us three really major takeaways. And I love the language around this that you use. The first, you said, surround yourself with people who share your beliefs and hold you accountable. You call this find your believers. And then you talk about your second takeaway was stop comparing yourself to others and find work that matches your personal ethos, your personal sense of who you are. And your third one, which I loved, was you got to have the hustle. Take the risk, ask the question, because when you do that, you pull people to you who are attracted to that hustle, et cetera. And then it was 4 years later, I think, at the TEDx at Wesleyan, the tone totally shifts and you say, move from purpose to patience. Take the time to learn that every piece is part of the puzzle. And you said that your biggest teachers were the jobs that were not in alignment with who you are. And then you said, we have to slow down, plant roots, focus on the simple and mundane, build a community, spend more time with friends. And then in your current book, Friendship in the Age of Loneliness, the slug line is, the language is amazing, Smiley. In this warm, inspiring guide, Smiley proposes a new solution for the mounting pressures of modern life. Focus on your friendships, create meaningful connections, make new friends, and deepen the relationships. He'll encourage you to prioritize real-world experiences, send snail mail, and engage in self-reflective exercises. Now, I want to know what precipitated that huge arc that is on public display for us to see? What was the driving force behind that huge shift within you?
That's a great question, Patrick. And for those that are just listening to the audio, you can't tell, but I'm very much, as soon as Patrick started speaking there on that point and that question, I was just smiling because thanks for doing your research, your homework there. A lot of people have not watched my second talk. It has way less views than my first talk. I think there, what I was grappling with is that it wasn't that I thought the first talk. So the first talk felt to me, it's really good, but it feels a little bit idealistic. It feels a little bit of this kind of sense of young person, let's say Gen Z, millennial, kind of coming in and being like, this is the way. And then a few years later, I was like, well, actually, when you look back and you actually start to think about it, just the simple advice around following your purpose, which I do believe is people in this world should work with purpose, especially people that have the privilege to do so, because it is an incredible privilege. And most people don't necessarily have that ability to think about what it is they really want or to leave a job that's unfulfilling for a variety of reasons. I think my takeaway was that some of my biggest learnings and growth happened in these moments of discomfort. And I think that it's that saying of, you know, people are looking for meaningful work. A lot of that comes when you look back.
Right.
And you can kind of distill, okay, this was really meaningful, or this allowed me to get to this point. I would have never gotten here had I not had these struggles. For example, I wouldn't be a speaker if I didn't have had the experience of disengagement in my own job to start learning about what that was like for myself or other people, young people, what that really meant at work. So meaning that is the most valuable experience of my career because it led me on this path to this other stuff. And I think, you know, the message around patience is something that, hey, this takes time. Like it takes time to find meaningful work. You can't just swipe right. Right. And I think that, you know, we're especially young people, but everyone nowadays is kind of expecting these things to happen as easy as it is to get an Uber, to book an Airbnb, to get a date, to order your DoorDash food, right? Two buttons, boom. Food at my door, or okay, cool, I'm going on a date tonight. Like, well, that's not what meaning and fulfillment in your work or your life is. It's actually a journey. Mm-hmm. It's actually time. It's those conversations. It's all that learning. It's those mistakes. It's those mentors. It's finding something that you're good at that you didn't think you'd be good at. It takes a lot of time. So I think that that arc was more perspective. And it was a little bit of a sense of some of that is just growing up, right?
Right.
Actually just, you know, age and maturity and just having more conversations. But I think what I wanted to distill there is that, and also, you know, I think I fell into, you know, not my fault, but it was, the message was all around me, a little bit of that millennial hustle culture, right? Which I think we can see looking back now, wasn't the most beneficial for anyone. A lot of the hustle culture that you get around kind of these early, some of the big breakout tech successes of the 2010s, right? If, you know, the Facebooks of the world and kind of move fast and break things as the ethos, right? And that was kind of the ethos as I was emerging as an entrepreneur and emerging, starting my own business and emerging as a writer and as a thought leader and as a speaker. Hustle, 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 hustle. And yes, in order to do anything creative or anything remarkable in this world, you have to hustle to some degree. Let's be real. Like you can't just sit around, you know, drinking a pina colada. Like this is work, right? Writing a book is really hard. Starting a podcast is hard. Opening a spa is hard. All of these things. And especially with all of the rising and my own loneliness and my own struggles with loneliness and mental health, what I think I've realized is you got to work hard, but you also have to take care of yourself and you also need to slow down. And if you're hustle, hustle, hustling, looking, posting always, you are never going to make, first of all, your body is going to be in bad shape. You're going to be burned out. You're not going to sleep well. You're not going to be healthy. You're not going to take care of the people around you. You are not going to do your best work. And that was something that I think I only could really realize having, you know, really been at it for more than, you know, when I did that TED talk, I had been kind of doing my own thing for a year or two, right? Like I was a little starry eyed. I'm glad I had that audacity to give that TED talk. And it's definitely resonated with a lot of people, especially young people. But I did that second one as just kind of a self-reflection, almost an edit on my own work. Now I still talk about the importance of purpose at work because I think all of the data shows how important it is, but I'm a little bit more nuanced in my approach.
Well, I think it's all one, right? Like there is that youthful exuberance to go out and break things and do things fast. But then within that, there has to be, as you develop, grow and learn and age, quite frankly, there becomes that moment of reflection and introspection. So that phase two, phase three will not look like phase one because the dynamics of who you are have shifted. If you are awake and living, and sort of attuned to what's happening. I love the journey because I thought it really highlighted the growth of man. You know, that picture.
Yes, yes.
Like, wow. And it made me think, what's chapter four going to be?
Right.
When the kids show up and, you know,
right,
all those things. I wanted to ask you who, and I wrote his name down because he comes up in your work. Who is Levi Felix?
So Levi Felix was a dear friend of mine. He used to live in the Bay Area. He started a summer camp for adults called Camp Grounded, which was a tech-free digital detox summer camp for adults. It was started in 2013 in California in the Redwoods. So basically, he would take these groups of people, 200-300 adults, all ages, not just 20-somethings, not just 30-somethings, for a four-day digital detox in the woods. So people would get there. I'd be in a hazmat suit pretending to, like TSA style, make sure that people didn't have any electronic devices on them. We'd take their iPhones, we'd take their computers, their Apple Watches, whatever, put them in a lock bag. And then basically people would spend 4 days connecting, playing, doing cool activities like yoga and, soccer and creative writing and all these different things, meditation. And basically the idea was pretty simple. It was for people to play as adults, to connect to that inner child that for many people has been dormant for years. We don't talk about work at camp. We didn't tell time. We didn't ask people their age. This idea that people were not their identity, their LinkedIn bio, right? Or the company that they worked for, or that they were 32 or 67 or 74. It didn't matter. It was they also, we use nicknames, not real names. They were Cookie Surprise or Chocolate Mousse or Bricky St. James or Lunch Con Queso. That's who they were. And that meant whatever it meant to those people. And it was a really powerful experience. So we did over, I think, 15 camps in 5 years, reaching 3,000 people. We did them in California and Texas, in New York. And it was really kind of a start of a movement around just being more intentional, not being a Luddite, just being more thoughtful about how technology is affecting our lives. And Levi and I became very close, and he actually got a brain tumor and died a year later at the age of 32 in 2017. So he was building this movement. He was a dear friend of mine. He was advocating for all these things. And then just spur of the moment, he's in a car one day and he loses vision. And a year later, he dies of cancer. And for me, I include a lot of his story in my friendship book, because I think he was the person I learned so much about the importance of in-person human connection from, and just kind of is a torchlight always for me. And I think our community and many people around the importance of remembering to just get off your phone and go play with your friends. Right. And it's so simple, but I think in this day and age, it's actually a revolutionary act to say, to actually just schedule time with your friends. Like, when are we having dinner? Like, I haven't seen you in a few weeks or a few months, or I miss you, or I'm going to write you a letter, or how are you, or let's get together, is actually a revolutionary act that's really, really important. And Levi reminds me of that. And I think reminds our community about the importance of in-person connection, about play, about just getting back to being, one of the things that I think, for children, play is what you're supposed to do. That's your job. That's literally like, go play. Like, go play. Recess, go play. That's it. There's no like rules. It's you just go play, make a new friend. That's the point of your existence. And somewhere along the line, because of, social conditioning and all of our expectations in society, like, we lose that. So when we get in a room, it's about, networking, or, I have to take care of business, or I have to put on this kind of act about, this is who I am, and this is my salary, and this is how important I am. But actually, we get more connection when we're more playful, when we kind of, just actually are ourselves, right? We are lunch con queso. We get to just be that person, whatever that looks like, without judgment. And that's what I think Levi's legacy is.
In 2022, and we're taping this in January, so the year has just turned, essentially. And in 2022, your New Year's resolution was to fall behind, to not keep up. And you wrote, "In falling behind, maybe I can discover what really matters." What are you looking at for 2023?
Well, I'll admit, yeah, so that was a year ago. I'll admit, I don't think I did a good enough job falling behind. What I meant in that resolution was, and somebody wrote a great comment on that, was like, I think I wrote that piece in going into 2022 and it was early December. And they're like, You already wrote your resolution for 2022. You're not even falling behind. So they're calling me out, which I thought was great. I like, LOL, it was perfect. But what I meant by that was, I think that I consider myself a pretty a high achiever, type A personality, very driven. You know, one of my strengths, Gallup Strengths Finder, is a achiever. That I was constantly trying to keep up. Right, I was trying to keep up with all these things. You know, my work, my speaking, trends, cryptocurrency, all of these things. Like, what's happening with AI? What's happening with Chat GPT-3? Like, all these things, which are important for people that are leaders and workforce thought leaders and just humans in general. And there was this sense that this is too much. I can't keep up. How could anyone keep up with all this? And this was still in the kind of midst of COVID. It's just too much. And whenever I do take a break from the news, do take a break from my Instagram, do take a break from keeping up, I feel so much better. And I have such amazing ideas. I think of something I want to write or say, or a person I haven't talked to in a while. So that was where that intention resolution came from. I don't think I want to do, so that's also a resolution. I think for 2023, I'm actually really, my resolution is focus. So it's similar. It's in, I want to be laser focused on my speaking, and so much so that I'm turning down like opportunities for coaching, for consulting, for training, for all these other things, because I just want to do speaking. I just want to do keynote speaking. And I've realized that if I've always, because again, achiever and wanting to do many things, and it comes up from a place of wanting to have an impact, but I've been pulled in too many directions. And so 2023 is a year for me to say, what does it look like if I just have one, especially for business, one focus, and just that's it. And if it's not 100% aligned, I'm going to pass it on to some, you know, a friend or someone who I think is great. And maybe I come back to that project in 2024, but to just be, you know, obviously it's impossible to only do one thing in the line of work that I'm in, but to the degree that I can, not be caught up with all of these other opportunities. What is everyone else doing? Oh, they're just launching this course. They're doing all this. Great. What is come back to focus? Come back to my focus. Back to my focus. And it will change. It always does. But knowing that I cannot do everything, and I want to be as focused as possible, because I think I've always been someone that says yes to things that pull me in so many directions that I then do 6-7 things, not mediocrely, you know, like in a mediocre way, versus doing one thing exceptionally. And that's what my goal is for this year, is to just be exceptional in one thing, and knowing that that's actually probably going to make me show up in all aspects of my life in a better way.
What do you want to say with your platform? What is the distilled message of Smiley?
I think it's, the top line I would say is, the future of work is human connection. And not just the future of work, but the future is human connection. The second I think we stray from that, I worry about that. I worry about where that leaves us as a society, as a culture. So the future is human connection. The future of work is human connection. And deeper, especially as it pertains to work, a little bit of back to basics. A little bit of, you know, we have gotten so far down the line of all of these complex tools and strategies and performance metrics, and all that matters. It's all there for a reason, data-driven engagement. And at the end of the day, people are human beings. They're looking to connect with other human beings. They're looking to be seen and heard. They're looking for psychological safety. They want to be safe. They want to be listened to. They want to be loved. They want to be cared for. That's it. I'm not saying that everything else doesn't matter. We have to sell our products. We have to build a sustainable business. We have to, you know, have a sales cycle. We have to, all of it. Yes. And we've lost in the 5, 10, 20 years of technological advancement. We're focusing on all of these other models, and we forgot the 2 people or 5 people or 10 people or 20 people in the room. And that is a mistake.
Smelly, thank you so much for your time today and your wisdom. I'm so grateful that you came on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Patrick. I've never had a podcast host do so much prep reading and analysis.
Listen, that's what we do here at the podium.
That is amazing. It actually adds so much to the conversation because you're coming to my work from such a deep critical view and pushing me and pushing the conversation farther. And you modeled exactly, I think, what is important for people in the workplace to practice is pushing people a little bit, like asking the deeper question, like, how has this changed? Or are you sure? Like, what about, you know, I really respect that and appreciate that about you and at the podium. Yes. And just in terms of how you showed up for the conversation. So I think that that's a model and a lesson for all of us.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you showing up. To those of you who are watching or listening, remember, we all have a voice. Use yours wisely. Bye, everyone. Thank you, Smiley.
Thank you, Patrick. Thanks for having me.